Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door, just like a Murillo Crossfield ball. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win? Only via the app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hello and welcome to Red Side of Trent, here to go through our thoughts and feelings as Forest run out 2-0 winners over West Ham United. Cushion has pulled out late from the squad, so just Lee Clark and Rhys Lane joining me today. Let's get right into it, chaps. We finally get to talk about a win, and it's a lovely feeling on a Sunday morning with our brews and whatever else people might be watching us talk about this. Lee, I'm going to start with you. It was two changes that saw Felipe partner Murillo in the back two, or back four, as you want to call it, for Niakate and Danilo replacing Yates, which is to my delight, as you'll all know. What did you make of those changes, first of all, and what battles did you kind of like fear and got you excited?
I welcome the changes. Like you've just said, I don't need to go into it. I'm always more satisfied, I guess, when Yates isn't playing. That's no disrespect to him. I just feel that we're a better side with the ball and a bit more progressive when he doesn't play. I was pleased with that. And it's always nice to see Felipe play. I think, I don't know if it's a bit OTT, but I think if we'd had Felipe fit all season, I don't even think relegation would be a word to even mention. I think we'd be comfortably sort of, you know, round the top of the bottom half. So, yeah, it's always nice to see him come back into the team. In terms of the battles, I looked at their team and kind of, I was a little bit surprised that they'd gone with 4-3-3, just because I'd spoke to a few fans in the build-up, and Moyes' kind of go-to when they're struggling is to go three at the back and kind of shut everything up play on the counter. So I was a little bit surprised that maybe that they didn't go with three centre-halves. But I always fancied that whoever they picked, to be fair, with Pakatar being out, I thought they'd be, I thought it'd be a very winnable game anyway. So it was more focused in what we could do rather than worrying about them, I guess.
Yeah, it did make me quite happy that James Ward-Prowse was in the number 10 position rather than in a deeper role, because I don't think he really got on the ball that much. But Rhys, Forrest got out of the box really, really quickly. Chances from Alanga and Gibbs-White well saved. West Ham seemed quite open, and we actually had some good patterns of play, I thought. What did you make of the opening exchanges of the game?
Yeah, I mean, the two aforementioned chances you've mentioned, they just hit them a bit too well, didn't they, really?
Yeah.
I mean, Tavares, I think he was actually watching the highlights trying to pick Nico Williams coming into the box, but Alanga's stepped back and he's actually made a really good contact with that. I think he's quite unfortunate. He's hit it so well, he's hit it straight down the throat to Areola. And we've kind of said, haven't we, before on this podcast, you know, at least make the keeper work, which he has done. And then the Gibbs-White one, I mean, it's just West Ham players all falling over one another. And in the end, Dominguez has like slid it into a few of them. And then Gibbs-White span. And again, he's hit it too well. It's straight down the throat of Areola. But Yeah, we started well, Adam. I said to you, didn't I, on the ground, I thought they were really open at the back. I expected us to get chances, which we did. But the obvious concern was, could we get that first goal? Because it was crucial yesterday. I said to you, if we can get the first goal, I think we'll win this. And the time we got the first goal, as we'll come on to, was, I mean, absolutely perfect. It's one of them, as like Lee usually said, where the two managers rip up their notes for half time, don't they? And yeah, one team's jubilant and the other team's down in the dumps going back into the dressing rooms.
Yeah, well, before we get into the goal, I did want to ask you about the gift that we almost gave West Ham, Reece, which was, unfortunately, Felipe kind of misplacing a pass and Antonio latched onto it. And as Christian was meant to host today, he gave me a load of his notes. He mentioned it was likened to Michael Mantian against Ipswich in 2018. I mean, plucking that out of the memory bank, I don't know. That must have really scarred him. But I've forgotten about that one. But I mean, what exceptional defending from Murillo it was. I mean, I know Antonio's just come back. He's probably a little bit rusty, but he showed him exactly where he wanted him to go, and it was brilliant, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a very rare ever one tip from Felipe. I agree with Lee. I thought that aside, I thought he was excellent yesterday. And then you're pretty much spot on, Adam, really, because, yeah, Antonio's just come back. He was rusty. I watched it back on the highlights this morning, and it just didn't kind of seem to have that, you know, match sharpness and that run. And Murillo just picked him off, didn't it? Like taking candy off a baby in the end. Yeah, excellent defending. Stood his ground, didn't go to ground, and then just took it off him. And you could see how frustrated Antonio was. I mean, him and Callum Wilson can talk on their podcast about how much the whinge between the pair of them the last two games at the City Ground. So, yeah, brilliant defending for Murillo. I mean, previous weeks, there was this kind of notion, wanted that, you know, he can't defend and we should play him at left back and we should play him as a CDM and stuff. You know, he's still a young kid. He's still very inexperienced. There's going to be games where he looks a little bit naive. But when he's on it, Murillo, like he was yesterday, like he has been, I think, the last few weeks personally, yeah, he can go to the top. He can, because he's got it all, hasn't he? He's quick. He can defend. You know, he can pick a pass. You know, something he might have to improve on his aerial ability. But he's still a young kid, but he could go to the top. He really could. And but I'm not going to get too carried away. But yeah, that was the art of defending, I think, as you said, Adam, in the ground.
Yeah, well, and we got an insight to his love life in the week on the Forest social. Just a few comments in there. Hello to Tom Newton. Good morning, Luke Hamilton from Australia. Evening, Emerson. Hello. Yeah, everyone. I mean, Luke's wrote. He said he loved the cheer that went up in the City Ground when Murillo made that tackle. It was like a penalty had been saved or something. But brilliant. So Lee, first. Oh, about to come to half time, and as I always hate, a pet peeve of mine is going down early in the concourse for a pint, because you never know what might happen. And what a great time to score. Just talk us through the goal.
Yeah, it was brilliant. I mean, again, I don't like to seem like I get stick because of my opinions on Yates, and I've had stick before, but if Ryan Yates plays, no one else can pick that pass out other than you play players like Danilo and Dominguez, you get passes like that in the final third. It's just a brilliant, brilliant pass. And do you know what? It's interesting because lots of pundits and so-called experts like to talk about our recruitment, yet no one seems to be banging the drum that we managed to sign Nicolas Dominguez for £8 million. It's always the bad stuff that gets highlighted with our recruitment. So yeah, fantastic ball. And do you know what? The moment that it was Taiwo on the end of it, I'd never thought it was going to not be a goal, to be fair. I just thought it was him all over. Just, you know, rolled the defender and slotted it in. It was just effortless. Yeah, just really good goal, really good football. And nice to see us score a goal like that, because I think sometimes we're kind of a bit more opportunistic, if you like, when it comes to scoring goals. And it was nice to actually play a bit of football and it result in a goal. So, yeah, can't praise it enough, really.
Yeah, I mean, I thought we deserved it, because I thought throughout the first half there was really clear patterns of play, like Tavares making inside runs for Hudson-Odoi to get the ball out wide in a lot of space. I thought the interlink with Danilo Dominguez and then getting the ball to the right-hand side. I just thought it all kind of clicked in a way, especially going forward, which we've not struggled with since Nuno's come in. We are scoring a lot of goals. And I mean, it's quite funny because before Tyro did score that goal, Reece did that kind of say to me, he's like, I think Zouma's having a bit of a better, getting the better of him. And then he goes and rolls Aguerd, who's one of the better centre-halves in this division, and it made it look pretty easy. So, yeah, great time to score. We come out second half, and I think, really, I thought we asserted our dominance. I thought there was a little bit of a worry pre-match when people saw the lineup and thought, like, no Yates, there's going to be no Steele, no Bite in there with Dominguez and Danilo. And I thought they really, like, got the better of Ward-Prowse, Phillips and Edson Álvarez in there. They didn't really get any joy. And then two yellow cards, Reece, in the space of a couple of minutes for Calvin Phillips. Nico Dominguez, who I feel like in the last few weeks we've seen some really good housery from him of late. And it kind of showed because it really rattled him. And then he subsequently got sent off very quickly.
Yeah, well, he is Argentinian after all. I mean, you only have to look up to the likes of Maradona in the past and Simeone for that country to see what their attitude's like in football. I'm not saying no more. Yeah, I mean, I literally just watched Match of the Day before we started with Emma. And yeah, I mean, the first one, I mean, Dominguez is trying to stop him playing, fair enough. But Phillips, you can't really shove someone over like that and not get away with a booking. It's a blatant yellow card. I mean, the ref, to be fair, was handing out cards like confetti at one point, wasn't he? I think there was 9 yellows and 1 red, I think, card yesterday. And just to touch on the Zouma comment as well, I mean, he should have been booked before. I thought he was getting the better of Tyro for a bit. You know, Tyro spun him, he brought him down and the ref didn't book him. I just couldn't get that round my head. And then he ended up getting booked later on for doing the exact same thing. So he probably should have been off. The second one, yeah, it's definitely one of them challenges that if he isn't on a yellow, he's getting a yellow. So he might feel it harsh. It's in quick succession. He's got 2 yellows, but he's late. You know, he's not won the ball. Gibbs White's flicked it away from him. And yeah, I don't think he can really have any complaints, to be honest. Like I said, it was lucky for me, Zouma didn't get sent off. So yeah, it's not going to plan for him at the minute, is it, Calvin Phillips? But that's another conversation for the summer. So I do like to keep an eye out on the England players. But yeah, after that, you was kind of hoping it wasn't going to be a charity FC, was you, where we struggle. And I mean, everything was kind of against us. As I'm not going to steal your thunder, but yeah, it was obviously good to wrap it up later on. And to be honest, I think West Ham had near enough given up after that red card. I thought they were extremely poor. That's taking nothing away from us. But, you know, me and you said, Adam, I mean, we found it vastly strange how our weaknesses have been set pieces and balls into the box, and they hardly put it into the box at all yesterday. I found that vastly odd, but it's brilliant for us because it was a well-deserved win.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, before we get into the penalty shout, Lee, and your inside knowledge, as you alluded to in our group chat, but we had so many chances. I mean, on another day, Anthony Anger scored the hat-trick. I mean, he hit a brilliant volley. I thought Danilo hit a great volley straight at Areola, unfortunately, but saves he has to make. I thought we just couldn't put the ball in the onion bag, and it kind of just, and then like when the penalty shout kind of goes against you, you kind of think it's going to be one of those days where we're like, we've not took a chance, are we actually going to squander this? But what was your thoughts, because it was at your end of the ground, it seemed a bit, it was hard to tell from the Bridgeford end, especially because of how far away you are. But Nico Williams, for me, is a very honest player and wouldn't go down without feeling out.
Yeah, it looked a penalty. I've got to admit, though, it looked a penalty for a different reason than what it actually was. It looked like he was just tripped over. It was one of those that, a bit like last week, I said straight away, that'll definitely get overturned. Or I actually said it'll definitely get looked at. I just think, I don't know, it's what I do have a little bit of sympathy with the ref, because I think it's a tough one to see. When you see what actually happens, it obviously, it's literally a split second when he stands on his foot. It's a clear foul, it's a clear error. But I do have, in real time, I do feel that that's a tricky one to spot. But then this is why we put, isn't this, that sort of decision is supposed to be what VAR's for me. It's a clear foul, it's a clear error. And it's one of them where the ref wants to go and have a look. The ref will welcome the chance to, because it happens so quickly in real time. It's one of the, again, it's the same as last week. If that's a European game, a FIFA or UEFA game, he's being sent over because they check them all. So, yeah, I think VAR has badly let the referee down again, I think, for me.
Are you allowed to tell us what you're talking in the group?
I am a little bit biased when it comes to Tom Bramall, because I do know him, I do speak to him. I've got a friend who's very close to him. And I don't need to go into all of the details, but the message that he relayed after the game was that he was, having seen it back, he's pretty annoyed that he's not been sent over to have a little look at that, because he can see that it's a clear error. So yeah, I think it's just one of those decisions that just needs checking. I've always said from the off, this clear and obvious error is completely flawed, because clearly the guy in the box watching it on the telly doesn't think he's made a clear and obvious error, but the referee, having seen it back, thinks he has, and he would welcome the chance to have a look for a situation like that. So,
I mean, I'm not being funny, but if he doesn't think that's a clear and obvious error, then he needs sacking on the spot.
It's just ridiculous. I don't understand. You can't get more blatant. I don't understand what the VAR's seen. It's just crazy.
I know you mentioned about the FIFA and UEFA games, Lee, and obviously they like to go to the screen more. Do you think there's like a resistance in the Premier League to keep going over to the monitor? Because we didn't originally do it, did we? Do you think there's now a resistance because most 99 times out of 100, the ref will go to the monitor and they agree with the monitor rather than say, actually, I'm going to stick with my original decision? Do you think that's why, like, there's a bit of resistance in the Premier League?
Possibly. I just think the Premier League like to be, I don't know, it feels like they like to make things difficult for themselves. Mm-hmm. I don't really know what the answer is. I don't really, like you say, there probably is a bit of a resistance because, like you say, 99% of the time when they go over, it does get, you know, changed. But I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I just think it's, I go back to the point I've made on this podcast several times before, though, to be fair. I genuinely think that there's some referees. Tim Robinson refed us against Man United, and he was good. I thought he was one of the best we've had all season. To say he's a new referee on the Prem, I thought he coped exceptionally well with that game. Clearly, he's not quite as good at VAR. And this is where I go back to, it shouldn't be 1 week you ref, next week you VAR. It should be a group of specialist officials doing VAR, because they could be trained that is the sort of situation yesterday and the one you won last week against Newcastle. They're the situations that need checking, that they're clear and obvious errors. But yeah, that's not an excuse. I just feel that some of these referees prefer reffing, and when they're tasked with doing VAR, they're just not quite. It's like when a footballer, if you're a centre forward and you get asked to play out on the wing, do you put quite as much effort in? Some will, but some won't.
I mean, Mike Dean said he couldn't do VAR, did he? And he's been the Premier League ref. How long was he a Premier League ref? 15 years, maybe, probably more. And he said he couldn't do VAR. Yeah, that was a mistake they made, big mistake they made.
Definitely.
Well, it was getting Clattenburg onto the books has done nothing already for our
great gig that is for. I'm going to just tell the club the referees are bleeding useless, and like I put on my Twitter, that bloke from Ref Support UK whinging on a Monday morning on Talksport. What a great job!
But like, can we have a normal day at Forest? Like, really? But Emerson in the comments, he's wrote, "I'm going to get slaughtered," but I think the Penno shout was soft. I think Williams goes down a little bit too late after the contact. The amount of soft Penno's given against is why it's frustrating. I'm not sure I agree with that. I think Nico's a very honest player, and I think he went down as soon as the contact.
You say that, Adam, but he chucked himself between two players against Arsenal and tried to win a free kick and didn't get it.
Yeah,
I will give him a little bit of credit with that comment, to be fair. I see what he's saying, because it is a foul. I think it's a foul, but I've got to see it back to think it's a foul. I think what he's probably saying is, I mean, you know, like when someone trips someone, it's like a clear intention. He's just running, isn't he? And he gets his foot tangled and his foot ends up basically stamping on Williams. So I do see what he's saying a little bit, but I think ultimately it's still a foul.
because he's caught back of his heel as well, he's like into the next stride of his run. Yeah. That's probably why it looks a bit like later goes down, because he's clipped back of his heel rather than if it's a trip, they've obviously hooked their leg round yours and obviously tripped you. So you're going to go over rather as if you stamp on back of your Achilles like he's done, you're going to like be into your next stride and then go down.
Yeah,
I mean, these fans, should say these people being derogatory there, the fans who are saying like this basic corruption on the Premier League, they've got a point on that decision yesterday, because you look at some of the other decisions as well. The Brentford one, they didn't get a penalty. And then the penalty what Arsenal got against Burnley. The two what weren't given for us and Brentford are loads more than the Arsenal one. And guess what? The big six club gets it. And, you know, I don't like this conspiracy and that, but they've got a point. They really have, you know, on yesterday.
I mean, I don't like the word corruption. I think that is probably a little bit, might get you in trouble, that sort of stuff. Plattenberg said it in his Daily Mail comment, didn't he? I think what you can say is it's easy to see why Forest feel are done by, I guess. I'm going back to last week, because ultimately, Liverpool got a really soft one. So, like Klattenberg says, I mean, we probably employed him on the back of that Daily Mail column, because it was yeah, mint for us. It was brilliant. Yeah. But like he says, for clubs like Forest, down the bottom of the league, you can see why it might be a mentality of us v them, because it does seem as though the teams higher up the division get different decisions to what we get.
What I do find interesting as well was how there was a big, you know, furore in the media earlier on in the season of how Wolves got all these shocking VAR decisions against them, yet it doesn't seem to get mentioned with us. But move on.
Yeah, I mean, great gig for Klattenberg going from gladiators to the Forest hierarchy in space of like 6 months. But Rhys, we did finally wrap it up. It was Callum Hudson-Odoi finished off, and I mean, what a flick from Divock Origi. I mean, you did say he was dictating play from out wide, as you said to me in the ground and that. Obviously, tongue in cheek, but I thought Nico Williams did exceptionally well to get there. They gave it an Elanga assist. I'm not sure how that happened.
It just like flipped off the back of his heel, didn't it? I think you'll take it there, won't you, to add to the stats. Brilliant work from Nico Williams. I mean, that was just sheer determination. And Agger, he just kind of gave up, and Williams just did him, got round him. And then he's put a really good ball back in into the box. That corridor of uncertainty is just saying that's why it's ended up in a bit of a mess for West Ham. It's flicked off Alanga and it's come to Hudson-Odoi. And I must say, at that stage of the game, under that pressure, it's a brilliant touch from Hudson-Odoi just to stop it dead. And then he can't really miss. He has to hit the target close to the corner, don't he? And I think it's Ben Johnson on the line who comes off his toe. But yeah, that was a really composed finish. And that it just showed a player's full of confidence at the minute. I mean, he's gone from probably someone half a dozen of games ago to people thinking we've wasted £3 million to someone who's absolutely flying at the minute. So it just shows, like I said a few times on this pod, what a good run of games can do for a player to get them up and running. And you're seeing that really with the guy behind him as well in Tavares, who was also very good yesterday. So long may it continue. But thankfully, like we said, there was no Charity FC and it was, you know, going to be, what was it, 6 minutes of injury time and West Ham pumping balls into the box and us heading it out. So yeah, that killed us. That killed the game dead. And I mean, we fully deserved it. I've seen the stats. I mean, David Moyes said in his post-match that he thought it was a tight game. I've no idea what game he was watching, to be honest, because all the stats, I think they edged us by 2% in possession, but we had more shots, you know, we had more corners. I don't like using XG, but I think our XG was nearly 3. Theirs was 0.5. So we fully deserved to win that game yesterday. And like me and you said, Adam, it could have and should have been more, really. It wouldn't have flattered us, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, I know went a bit extravagant with a 5-3, but we definitely should have got 5 goals. I'm not going to lie. Like,
they definitely shouldn't have got 3.
Oh, no, it was unbelievable.
Sells didn't have to make a save. He didn't have to make a save of note. There was one where he parried down into his feet and caught it, but there wasn't anywhere he had to make a save, really.
It was very puzzling because we said this, Rhys. I know we mentioned it a bit earlier about them taking a short free kick from out wide, but Ward-Prowse, I think they took about 2 corners all game, and you're thinking a big team like West Ham and our obvious weakness, you'd have thought they'd like really get it in the box at every opportunity.
Well, that's why I said in his group chat, it kind of felt yesterday for West Ham that there was a team on the brink of needing a change of manager. I think there was we had more, a lot more determination, desire to win that game than them. And it showed, and that's why we fully deserved to win it. I mean, like I say, the second goal shows that the determination from Williams rather than their defender to stop that ball getting into the box, that showed it yesterday.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on McDonald's app at participating restaurants. 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Yeah, well, definitely. I mean, let's get into some slept on it thoughts.
Red side of the Trent. Slept on it thoughts.
Thank you as ever for getting involved with this. Joe Baker's cat, Forest were excellent, 2-0 flattered West Ham. Steve Minnie, Hudson-Odoi excellent, should have been 4 or 5-0. Enjoy Murillo, he won't be here too long, sadly. Up them Reddens, Nigel Clough is the son of God. Don't say it too loudly, but Forest kept a clean sheet. Can't criticise a single individual performance, with standouts being Murillo and Neco. But someone please tell me, what on earth do Forest need to actually do to get on the right side of a decision regarding a penalty? Martin Wayman, 10 out of 10 all round, but in heaven's sake, what is VAR doing in the game? Nick Kempel, West Ham dined in hell for the second time in 4 months at the Forest family. They must have food poisoning. I'm not sure what that means, but okay. I was in the top one. I've had a horrible chest infection for the last week and a half. It's been miserable. Both goals made me jump out of my sick bed, followed by a hacking cough. Who needs antibiotics when you have Forest? Jim H, we played well, but defended poorly against Newcastle. But against West Ham, we played well. Stand out with Felipe, calm and classy. Murillo, what a talent. And Callum Hudson-Odoi growing with every game. Believe we are still to get better when the AFCON guys return. You Reds. Johnny Antcliffe, best performance of the season. Maybe the performance, best performance since promotion. Very comfortable win, which should have had more. How we didn't get a pen on Neco was a joke. It's just one game, though. We need to replicate that now in every game for the rest of the season. Premier Elliot, who joined us in midweek. Hello, everyone. Team management and fans put on a peak Barclays. So happy we won. This squad not only deserves to survive, but thrive in this league. He's gave us a fact, because I did enjoy him in midweek. There's a tree in Pakistan that's been under arrest for over 120 years. If take that as what you will, that's very odd, but very funny. Josh Potts, back five were very solid yesterday. Murillo is a steal, and credit to Neco for taking his chance. He was superb. Shout out to Callum Hudson-Odoi, who's bringing himself into form at the perfect time for us. And Taiwo, who only needed one chance, were really looking like a Premier League team. Sam didn't watch the game, as on holiday, but what can work out is Neco had a very good game. Murillo and Felipe, good pairing, and Tyra's as good as ever. Really glad Callum Hudson-Odoi playing with confidence and getting goals. Capacity and function. For once, Charity FC didn't show up. For once, we scored against 10. For once, we scored an added time. For once, we kept a clean sheet. For once, it'd be nice to get a VAR decision going our way. And then friend of the pod, Jeffro, last of all. Thought the majority of the team put in a man-of-the-match performance, but Williams and Murillo were clear favourites. Murillo's one-on-one tackle probably set the tone for that game. Williams, apart from that touch, was unreal. His effort to keep the ball for the second goal was brilliant. Thank you very much for everyone that got involved. Sorry, can't read out. There's so many to go through. Hopefully next week, try and get you on the show. Some really good points there. I thought, like, I think a lot of love for Callum Hudson-Odoi. I thought Neco Williams, brilliant. I am interested to know, guys, obviously man of the match was Neco Williams, and he is on the player performances, actually. So, Lee, I will start with yourself. Do you think he deserved man of the match, and what was your thoughts on him overall?
No, I don't think he was man of the match. Just my opinion. I would probably edge towards Hudson-Odoi, I think. I thought he was absolutely brilliant. But it was one of those games, to be fair, where I think there was probably five or six contenders, and Williams probably was one of them. His performance was good. I'll be honest, he still scares me to death defensively. He just does. I think the one silly free kick that we did give away yesterday was from him. But yeah, he was good. I'm not going to nitpick. He was very good.
Fair enough. Who was your man of the match? Did you say Callum Hudson-Odoi?
Hudson-Odoi for me, just ahead of Murillo for me.
Fair enough. Reese, I'm going to give you. I'm going to kind of steal Lee's thunder a little bit, but I'm going to give you a duo of Tavares and Callum Hudson-Odoi. I know they were picked out by Match of the Day, but overall thoughts on them?
Just two players, really, who, as already said in this podcast, who are reaping the rewards of a run of games, especially Hudson-Odoi. I mean, what's that? Is that 3-3 now?
Yeah.
There's been some assists as well in there, haven't they? I can think of the one at Brentford, the cross for Chris Wood. Sure, there might be another assist in there as well. Correct me if I'm wrong. So he's gone from, like I said earlier, someone who's, you know, a lot of fans are moaning at and we're not seeing enough of him, to now is, you know, he's a permanent fixture in the team, isn't it? And long may it continue. And to be honest, I still think there's more to come from him. I really do. I think he's looking a lot sharper than he did at the start, but I still think he can carry on getting better. You know, he's only 23, so still a young lad. So, yeah, really good from him. I thought he was really good yesterday. It's all about opinions, isn't it, football? I mean, I said on my Twitter that I wasn't going to argue against Nico Williams' man of the match because I thought he was excellent, but I would have given it to Murillo personally. But that's another discussion. Nuno Tavares, yeah, again, you know, probably coming to the side under Nuno, looked a bit rusty. I mean, he's got to stop his shooting, I must say. I mean, the second one, to be fair, wasn't a bad effort. He was only about a yard over rather than 100 yards over. So we're getting better. But yeah, he was good. I mean, you look at the composure. We've said about Nuno Tavares, haven't we? He just seems to do more bad things than good things. But you look at the one chance he set up yesterday. I mean, he skinned Kufalu every time he got skinned, then chucked himself to the floor holding his face. It really peed me off because, you know, they kind of know some footballers that if they hold the face, the ref will stop the game. And that's got to be clamped out because they're cheating the referee. I mean, did he even get touched in the face? He did it again later on as well. But back to Tavares, you know, and then he's putting a ball into a really good area. I said earlier, I thought Nico Williams was going to come onto it, but Alanga's kind of cut back a yard and he's made Ariola make a decent save. I mean, I've said on this pod previously, I mean, he's absolutely rapid into Tavares. He keeps improving game by game. And I've never understood, Percy, this notion of what fans have said, saying, what does Nuno see in him? This is Nuno, the manager. Because clear to me that his athleticism is what Nuno sees in him. Yeah, fair enough. His end product might not be there all the time, but his athleticism to get up the pitch and provide a really quick left side, which last week I thought Newcastle struggled with massively. I mean, couldn't keep up with him. That is the reason why Nuno has kind of gone with him over Toffolo. You know, Toffolo, with respect to him as much as I like Toffolo, hasn't really got that athleticism, has he, to keep bombing forward with the pace Tavares has. So, yeah, I thought he was good yesterday. Probably his best game. To be honest, I've seen some gradual improvement over him from the last few weeks. Hopefully, that can continue because that left side is a real force at the minute, and it's something that Match of the Day touched on. Shay Given touched on it, saying how good it was. So if that left side can carry on playing really well, then that's going to cause any team problems because of just the pace really of it.
Yeah, I mean, what I like from a tactical point of view is because Tavares makes an underlapping run kind of thing, he can either receive the ball and he takes out a player because the winger isn't following him because he's already inside of midfield and you're overloading, or you give him so much space to Hudson-Odoi just to get out his fullback. And I think that's it's so simple but so effective.
What we've said as well about, you know, the fullbacks on this podcast is that, and Lee's just said it again, about we've been scared to death defensively. And yeah, the one from Williams, what did blot his copybook yesterday, was that bit of a naive challenge, wasn't it, on
Antonio.
I can't remember who it was on. It was Antonio. I know Walcott took the free kick. But you look at their front three yesterday, Kudos, Bowen, Antonio, all really good players at this level. You know, one's an England international in Bowen. Kudos to Ghanaian. Really impressive at the World Cup. Real good talent. They didn't really get a kick, did they, again? Let's be honest. Absolutely didn't really get a kick. The only chance Antonio Amarillo dealt with. I mean, Jared Bowen, he may as well come and sat with me and you, Adam, to be honest. you generally say he wasn't even playing. I mean, what did he do? It just, I mean, Kudos was also a lucky another one who was really borderline on a red card. I mean, he got booked and then brought someone down again. So, yeah, defensively, I thought as a back four, and I thought we was fantastic yesterday.
Yeah, I thought Nico Williams had Mohamed Kudos's number, to be fair, and the same with Tavares on Bowen. Early doors, I thought Bowen might give him a little trouble. He kept cutting in and out, but nothing.
We've seen them performances from Nico. I mean, the shame for Nico on, you know, is his Forest career has always been kind of stop start. I thought, you know, he started pretty well. Then there was a period when he was struggling a bit. He then gone back in the team at the end of last season. And then Brennan Johnson decided to decapitate his jaw when he was playing well. he then at the start of this season was, you know, fought for fifth choice right back under Steve Cooper for a bit, and then surprisingly, really, Cooper brought him back in just as he was about to really lose his job. And then he came back in, did really well, was one of the standout players for Steve in his latter days. And then, unfortunately, he's fell behind Montiel again. But now Montiel's got injury. It's his time to kind of shine again and keep that shirt. And on that performance yesterday, then if Montiel was fit next week, which I know he won't be, you'd say, yeah, Nico keeps a shirt. So, yeah, good to see. I just want him to kind of get going, really. It's just always fits and starts for me. Seems to have a good few games. And then for some reason, it's, you know, it don't seem to work out for him. But yeah, he was excellent yesterday. That's the type of desire and determination you want when you're in a relegation battle, what Nico showed yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, obviously got Alaina coming back now, so that'll be a good competition.
He's not going to get back in the team at the minute, to be fair.
No, but it's still good. Anyway, Lee, I'm going to give you Morgan Gibbs-White. I thought seemed to have the freedom of the park, weirdly enough, again, when West Ham got Alvarez and Phillips. They got nowhere near him.
Yeah, it was good. I'm a bit surprised you've given me Gibbs-White, actually. I'm not bothered, but
it's
funny. I tell you why I'm a bit surprised. This is not a criticism of Gibbs-White, but I think I've just said that. I think you could make a case for five or six being man of the match yesterday, but I don't actually think Gibbs-White would be one of them. I love the amount of space he had. He gets into great areas, but I just don't think he just knits everything together so nicely, doesn't he? I mean, there was a time actually when it looked like he might have to go off injured, and all of a sudden you start thinking, oh, it'd be interesting to see how we play without him. I don't really know what else to add for Gibbs-White, because I just thought it was, by his standards, I thought it was actually a pretty quiet performance. But that's not a bad thing. It was just that other players kind of stepped up. I don't really know what else to say.
As an added extra, because I don't know who you really wanted. It's all Christian's fault. He's wrote the bloody notes, right? I've just copied and pasted. I did want to get your thoughts on Felipe, because I thought it was an interesting time to include him back in the squad. But I just generally thought, although he made the one little mistake which led to Murillo's absolute art of defending, and I mean, I think Olaena called him the Kaiser or called him Beckenbauer, didn't he? Yeah, which is the Kaiser in his video when he come back and everyone's like loving him. But I thought Felipe just kind of breathed a lot of composure and experience back into us. What did you think?
Yeah, it's funny actually, because I'm just looking at his stats. While you were talking, I was just looking at his stats. And defensively, tackles, clearances, blocks, there was like a couple, but obviously for a centre back, that's not what you'd consider a lot. But yeah, he was just very composed, very calm. And like you say, I think his leadership qualities probably slip under the radar. We just looked so much better yesterday. And I don't know if, I mean, some of that might be to do with the fact that we've changed the keeper. I just think they feel a bit more confident with a more commanding keeper behind them, I think. But yeah, Felipe's qualities, I think, come with the sort of the captain responsibility. I know he's not the captain per se, but you could quite happily toss him the armband, couldn't you, if Gibbs-White or Yates isn't playing? He was very good. The challenge with him is just going to be keeping him fit. I mean, every game he kind of gives a big, like, thumbs up to the Trent end, and you just sometimes think, is that going to be the last time we clap Felipe? Because you just worry that he's... I mean, I'll be honest with you, I'd be amazed if he plays against Villa. He strikes me as the sort of player that's going to play every now and again now. I hope I'm wrong, because I think, like I said at the top of the show, I think if he's fit and playing every week, I don't think relegation will either be... Well, I mean, I know we've got points deductions to consider, but in terms of us picking up enough points to give ourselves a fighting chance, if Felipe's fit every week, I don't think there'll be an issue.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting to see that Niakati didn't come on to kind of see the game out, and Amabadile did, but it's all good options, I guess. And Niakati had a really good game against Ollie Watkins, who obviously we're going to play next and we'll get on to. But Reece, just to finish it all off, I'll give you Nico Dominguez, because I thought he was excellent yesterday. Very under the radar as well, actually, weirdly.
Yeah, I think he's gone under radar as a whole because, you know, some of the comments you see on social media, I mean, again, I don't want to, you know, go on to Ryan Yates, but, and I feel really sorry for the lad, because he's, I think, like you said last week, Adam, he's always the biggest topic. But when you got fans saying, oh, yeah, he's the only player who fights for the shirt, I mean, did they not watch Nico Dominguez every week? Because he gives his all every week for me. I mean, that pass was sensational, because he's got to get out for a few bodies. He's played at speed, and to be fair, I mean, Tyro's touch, I mean, he stopped it dead, didn't he? And obviously spanned the defender. But yeah, been a really good signing. Chipped in with a few goals, can pass the ball, got a lot of energy, can put his foot in. Yeah, very good. Very, very good midfielder, all-round midfielder. Similar in the mould to me to probably Jimmy Garner, who we had in the Championship, that type of mould where you kind of get a bit of everything from him. And yeah, what more can I say about him? He was probably in Lee's five or six contenders for the Man of the Match yesterday, I'd imagine. He would have been a shout for the Man of the Match. He just got obviously substituted into later on. But yeah, he's been a really good signing. He's been one of the ones what you'd file under a success so far from the recruitment team. Yeah, he's just a typical South American, got that fire in his belly, hasn't he? You know, you see that with Aguilera when he come on the odd time. He's a young kid and he was sticking it about and that. So I know he's from Central America, but similar region. But yeah, he's a really good player. Dominguez, really, really like him. Yeah. And I mean, he's been pretty much a mainstay, hasn't he, under Nuno, I think, if I'm right there. So, you know, we've got Sangare to come back. I think the two midfielders yesterday, I thought they were both very good, Danilo and Dominguez. So, you know, it's good. But it's, you know, one swallow doesn't make a summer, so I'm not going to go too over the top. We've got some very, very tough games coming up. I mean, you look at the next three games, you know, Villa, I know they've been lost the last couple at home, but under Unai Emery, have been pretty flawless at home, very tough. I mean, Liverpool are absolutely flying. And then obviously you've got Manchester United, who are in a bit of form at the minute, touch wood, because we need them to beat Luton today, which is a very... Manchester United stinking the place out type of performance, but I hope I'm wrong on that. So yeah, we'll see. But yeah, I really like Nico Dominguez, really good footballer.
Can I just jump in on Dominguez as well? I just think as well, like Reece has said pretty much everything that I can echo everything he's said, but I just think as well, it riles me a little bit when running around is used as that's the mandatory requirement anyway. Whereas I think Dominguez does that, and he's technically probably better than most of our midfielders as well. So he's kind of like he is a Yates type player, but I just think he's a better footballer. And that's not a criticism of Yates, but I think he should be looking at someone like Dominguez, similar age bracket, as someone that he should be aspiring to be. If you look at Dominguez, he knows where the ball's going before he gets it. And that's the sort of thing that I think Yates needs to add to his game to go to that next level, because kind of he'll get it and then he's got to kind of think where the ball's going, whereas Dominguez already knows where he's going to put it. So it's just little things like that. And I actually think Dominguez would be the ideal role model for Yates, to be fair, if he wants to take his game to that next level.
To be fair, like when Yates come on yesterday, he did the things what we want, what he's good at. You know, he got his head in a way, added a couple of balls out of the box. He then got he hassled, won the ball back. And what did he do? The Jack Cole back four. Thank you very much. We'll have a free kick on the edge of our own box. Thank you very much, referee. And that's what he's good at. You know, it's just with some fans, it's like we've got to put down every other central midfielder we've got to kind of accommodate Ryan Yates. And like I said, I feel sorry for him because he's always the topic of conversation on social media. And, you know, some people going over the top on him are kind of, you know, getting the stick for him. And then that's what I like we say with this ref support guy. He'll come on TalkSport Monday morning and defend these referees for decisions they've made when, you know, the defending the indefensible. You know, if he'd turn around and say, yeah, he's made a mistake there, you won't get such a pile on. But yeah, he's still going to be an important squad player for us, as they all are, Ryan Yates. And yeah, one, he didn't start yesterday, but there'll be times when we need him. And like I say, he came on yesterday and did his job. So that's all you can ask for.
I mean, if you want to add anything else to Nico Dominguez and put a bit of a fun spin on it, he makes the boys and girls swoon. He's quite a good looking bloke. He's
it got some like,
he's got some hazardry.
Like Marco Verratti, doesn't he? The Italian, I always he's got good players in, then we're on to a winner. So
he's got some hazardry about him. I love him. there was a question from Alistair I did want to address with you. I just want a quick, brief answer. Does Ibrahim Sangare get back into our midfield with the performance yesterday? For me, it's a quick no because it's their shirt to lose and he's been away. But it's a great option to bring back into the squad with this running now, isn't it? Lee, I'll start with yourself.
I'm going to disagree with you and say yes. If you want a brief answer, yes, for the simple reason our next three games are very tough. We're going to do a lot of defending. And I think it's... if you look, you can only go on Sangare's last game for us and I thought it was absolutely magnificent against Newcastle. So given the nature of the fixtures we've got, it's a yes for me.
Okay, Reece.
It's a tough one, isn't it? You know, Lee's made a very fair point there. I think it'd be extremely harsh on any of the 11 who played yesterday to lose their spot. You always kind of say, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, do you? And the 11 yesterday deserve to keep their shirt. So it's kind of one of them, you know, sat on the fence with splinters in the backside. I mean, if he comes in, yeah, we brought him in to be this number six, what we spent a lot of money on, and you've got to kind of get him back in the team. But if you don't, then hopefully Dominguez and Danilo can play how they did yesterday and, yeah, play well. You know, we've got a tough run of games, but it's one game at a time. You know, Aston Villa's next. Like I said, you kind of got to think of the positives and, you know, they've lost the last few at home. Like, they was pretty flawless under Emery at home, but they've lost the last few. Sheffield United went there, were really poor and got a result, so... You know, you've got to believe, haven't you? And we'll see you next week. And I guess it kind of goes, our training goes this week because before he went to AFCON, Nuno said he wasn't really fully fit. Did he, Sangare? Nah, you know, he's played a few games for Ivory Coast. He then got about his leg pretty much broken and then he kind of dropped out. I don't know whether that was maybe a bit of soreness or bruising or it's just been a tactical change. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But either way, I don't mind, but if it was up to me, I personally would go with the same 11 if I had to put my 2 pence in.
It's just nice to have like almost a fully fit side. We're a Chris Wood away from a full fit side.
You need options in this level at this level, especially when you know in a relegation battle. You know, you're all right when you're Manchester City and got 11 world class players playing and free to bring on, etc. But for teams like us who are that, you know, bottom half, you need options who are going to come on and exploit them fine margins, as Mark Warburton used to say, because that's what it is, isn't it?
Yeah, it's funny, actually. It's funny you talk about squad depth, actually. Someone shared our bench from the last time we played West Ham at home.
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Bringing Cafu on, who's the contrast now bottom of the league with Rotherham.
Cafu, Cook and Surridge were the guys who come on, and you've got Ollie Hammond and Lyle Taylor on the bench in the Prem. Mm.
Yeah, League One in the National League. So it shows. I mean, like yesterday, for example, you know, we brought in Gio Reyna, didn't get on yesterday. So there's plenty of options.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd be very interested to see if there's a statistic in the Premier League where three different goalkeepers for a first team have kept a clean sheet. Because I did forget to mention that Matt Sells is our third goalkeeper to keep a clean sheet in the Premier League. Only Forrest could do that sort of thing. That's a pub quiz question if I've ever heard one. But I know there was some controversial stuff that's happened this week, obviously. A brief chat about that. The ticket sets prices for Man United are absolutely ridiculous in the FA Cup. I feel like it's a topic that we might have to we should touch on a tiny bit. I do think £25 for an away ticket, and then why are Forest charging nearly £50 for an FA Cup game? I don't know, but just a brief opinion on that. Reece, starting with you.
Well, that's for some fans, isn't it, based on where they sat. I mean, for me personally, all Forest have got to do there is just say it's £25 across the board for all season ticket holders. At the end of the day, you know, some people won't like this, but the season ticket holders put their money up front at the start of the season for the club, you know, and they invest in the club at the start of the season. £25 across the board, wherever you sat. If you're like a member, maybe go up to £35 and say if it's general sale, which I doubt it gets you, maybe £40. I don't get why they've done a price bracket different for season ticket holders. I mean, I was fortunate that I'm in Bridgeford Upper nowadays and it was £25 for me. If it would have been £45, I wouldn't have bothered, mate, to be honest, because I just think that's a bit of a rip-off, personally. I know fans will say, oh, well, we pay £45, but like I said, for season ticket holders, they're the ones who put the loyalty in at the start of the season with the money up front, and they do deserve a bit of loyalty. You know what I mean? That's part of being a season ticket holder, but they should have just done it across the board. I kind of don't get why they did a bit of a bracket, but at the end of the day, Forest, you know, it will sell out. It's Manchester United in town. You know, there'll be people who are dying to get a ticket who haven't seen Manchester United come to the City Ground this millennium. So they know it's going to sell out, and they'll see it as from a business perspective, as long as there's bums on seats, which there will be. You know, they don't not really fuss, really, who sits there.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked to see Man U fans who have never even seen Man United be
the amen. You know, which I hope isn't, you know, any Forest fan who's doing that with respect to make profit. You know, I know we're in a cost of living crisis, but come on, you know, we don't want, I'm not going to swear, but we don't want them in the home end.
Yeah. Lee?
Yeah, I can't really disagree with anything Reece has said, I guess. It would have been a nice gesture, I think, if it had been a kind of a for season card holders, a one price fits all, but football's turned into a business, hasn't it? I mean,
what was it for you, Lee, in Trent End Upper?
It's 25. We're the peasants, so we get the cheap tickets.
we're sitting on the boxes, we are. Yeah, the crates, so,
I am torn. I think it's funny because the ones moaning about it are typically the ones that moan about absolutely everything. I mean, it's the sort of people that moan when the players are looking happy in training because we're in poor run of form and stuff like that. I think I get why people moan because cost of living crisis, football's expensive anyway. But I think ultimately the club have seen it as an opportunity to make some money. And it does stink. But do you think Forest are the only club doing this sort of stuff? No, it's how the modern game's become, sadly. It would have been a nice gesture for Forest to kind of go against the grain in that sense. But they've chose to make a few extra quid out of it, haven't they? So it's one of them, I think. I was a bit surprised with it, if I'm being honest. It did surprise me, except it's not something that we've typically done for the FA Cup games. I think when we played Liverpool that year, I think, and Arsenal and Leicester in that same run, I don't think there was a different brackets then. I think it was all one, the same price. So,
like I said, it's just a demand now, isn't it? Forest will know now that if a season ticket holder doesn't take up that seat for £45, somebody else will,
that's
unfortunately.
It.
Yeah, well, kind of like caveats into the next point, because Dan Taylor released an article about the redevelopment of the main stand and claimed that there was a few occasions where Forest could have sold 50,000 tickets last season. So that kind of hits the nail on the head there, where if someone doesn't sit there, someone will take it regardless of the price. But a positive article from Dan Taylor, not that I've read it or from from word for word or anything, but From what I gather, something that he doesn't regularly do, apparently, because he does get a lot of stick, Dan, doesn't he, for being a bit negative towards the board. But what's your guys' thoughts on that as a piece anyway, Lee?
Yeah, it feels positive. I think the demand is there for tickets now. So, yeah, it feels positive. I am intrigued to see what actually happens with it all, because it does seem as though there's, I think Dan alluded to it as well, didn't he? There is still some, like a bit of a sticking point that's stopping a spade going in the floor, I guess. But it's good that we're redeveloping this site rather than moving elsewhere, I think. It'd be a sad day if we ever moved, I think.
Reece?
Yeah, very, very exciting. You know, I love where the ground is situated. You know, you always get that buzz, don't you? I mean, even with work, when I drive over Trent Bridge, you always kind of glance over and look at the ground and you always get that buzz. But, you know, the ground is a bit outdated in terms of its facilities. I mean, definitely the main stand So to have, you know, a brand spanking new main stand, the club's needed that for Christ 30 years probably, you know, especially now we're back in the Premier League. You know, to be fair to the board, etc., the chairman, whoever, you know, they spruced up the ground with some designs and it does look a lot better, a lot more colour coordinated, and just them little touches have made it look far better. But very exciting plans. I really do hope it comes off. You know, Marinakis wants to, you know, pump the money in, and he's giving it the green light. I've no idea why the council are trying to basically rip us off on the lease, etc. I mean, surely they'd want this to happen. You know, it, like Marinakis said, it'd create jobs, it'd bring more people to Nottingham, etc., more money into the city. So why they're making it difficult, I've no idea. I mean, whether that's appeased the few residents who've made reservations about the project. I mean, I know for a fact that there's Derby fans who've signed that petition who don't even live in Nottingham. And that's how sad it gets. So, yeah, let's hope it. First, we can't. I know he does mention that if we drop back into the Championship, he still wants to go ahead and stuff, because obviously if that does happen, the worst was to happen, we'd obviously want to bounce back, and you've got to kind of build your club still, haven't you? But let's hope, you know, we stay in this league and then plans start to see fruition, because, yeah, that'd be brilliant for the club. It'd be a really, really good day for the club. I know, like Matt, who we have on this pod, loves the main stand, but get me on that digger to bring that stand down. Respect, because it is, you know, someone hit it bang on the head on Twitter saying you've got the best view from the main stand that you actually can't see it, which made me chuckle. But yeah, I think every fan taking the nostalgia away will say, yeah, a brand spanking new stand with modern facilities and would be brilliant for the club. It really would.
Yeah, well, didn't you say yesterday to me, Reece? Yes, I think it was Murillo might have cleared the board. I think it could have hit.
Yeah,
it could have hit Brian Laws in Coventry or whatever. And you were hit like, one, I'm surprised it didn't fall down.
Hit like the master bolt, what keeps it all together and just brings it all down. But
I mean, I thought what kind of excited me as well was like the redevelopment of the training ground and kind of getting up to scratch with that, because you've got like your rivals like Leicester have built on our border, and Derby have always had a good academy. I know people who have actually been part of that setup, and I know it's far better than what we've got, considering we're meant to be a Cat 1 academy and as such. But let's digress and move on. We've got Aston Villa next weekend at Villa Park, my favourite ground outside of Forest. Last season, Jonjo Shelvey gifted Traore the lead, where we would look like we might have frustrated Aston Villa. Reece, as you've alluded to, they've been very, very good at home, nearly had a flawless season, and they've beat the likes of Arsenal and Man City there this season, but lost to Man United last
weekend. Newcastle as well.
And Newcastle, yeah. What do you make of the game? How do you see it going? What's your thoughts?
It's going to be a tough game, mate. They're a good side, Villa. You know, they're chasing top four, aren't they, really? So they'll definitely be the favourites with the bookies. Our mantra is going to have to be going there and playing on the counter-attack, and it's something that we probably could get some joy with, because we've got, like I say, that left back and left winger at the minute, really quick and really in form. You know, Alanga yesterday, at last couple of games, has got that little bit of sharpness back, hasn't he? You know, Nico Williams had a really good game yesterday, so it's going to be tough, but can we go there and get a result? We can. And I'm going to say we'll get a 1-1 draw, which I'd be, give it to me now and get back on the M6, back to Nottingham.
Yeah. Lee?
I'm going draw as well. Splinters firmly in my backside. I think it'll be 0-0. I think it'll be an absolute snore fest. And like Reece says, back on the bus.
We'd take that, mate.
Yeah, absolutely. Be a good game. I've got a game myself, so I won't watch it. So we'll probably win and we'll probably play brilliant. That's usually what happens when I don't watch it. So,
be a good game. You've just predicted 0-0.
I just think it might be tight. I think it'll be all right. I think it'll be an entertaining 0-0. I think it'll be one of them where there's chances of plenty, but no one finds a way through.
Yeah. I mean, I watched the game against Man United, and I thought what Man United did really well, considering they should have got beat in that game. There was a turning point where they kind of like made Villa run out of steam, and like John McGinn wasn't making them third player runs, and Jacob Ramsey wasn't quite doing that, and they kind of like ran out of puff. And I kind of think if we can frustrate them as much as possible and kind of get their crowd turned on them and make the use of the counter-attack, then there's no reason why we can't go get something positive. And we showed that in the home game where we really frustrated Aston Villa, because they really, I might shoot myself in the foot here, but they don't really have a left-hand side as in a left winger, because Buendia is injured. I think Zaniolo's out of favour and was garbage at the City Ground, in my opinion. It's Leon Bailey and McGinn and kind of those third runners. No Kamara, who's picked up an ACL injury. Unfortunately, they've had a real torrid time with ACL injuries this season, Aston Villa. But Pau Torres has come back in. I think it's somewhere. I think we can get at Villa, and I'd love a draw. I'd love to predict a win, but I think a draw would be a really, really good result with you guys. I think I have to kind of sit on that fence as well. Like three little birds there, kind of thing. But yeah, I'll go for a 2-2. I think both teams will score goals. Watkins is in tremendous form. It can be hard stopping him, but we did stop him last time, so hopefully we can get a result. But is there anything else to plug, guys? Anything you want to say? Finishing up.
No. The less I say about Villa away, the better. So move on.
Okay. Thank you. Well, thank you very much for joining us. 68 people here, plenty of comments. I hope you enjoyed it. If you've not managed to watch us on YouTube, you can probably catch up at a later date on audio platforms or YouTube itself. If you can, drop us a like and a subscribe. It does help us a little bit. I will beg a little. Thank you very much. And we'll catch you for a preview with a Villa game, whether that's with a Villa fan or a couple more Forest fans. We'll get onto it. So, Sarah, enjoy the rest of your weekend. Come on, you Reds.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on McDonald's app at participating restaurants. 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.